Hey everybody, welcome back to the Baldi's Deliberation. This will be day two for us. I don't know how what kind of devilry Jim will package this up into, but if you don't know, this is not required reading or listening or watching for the Baldi's. This is just our process to arrive at the final product, which is the Baldi's ceremony, where we actually award the winners and we kind of like recap some of the strongest arguments for them. So like this is only this is the super duper extended edition for diehard fans only, people that want white noise to go to sleep to, etc. So yeah, look if you found your way here and like where the fuck am I? How can I get back? Look for the one where we're wearing tuxedo t-shirts. Has Baldi's award ceremony probably in the name of the title. We're going to be deliberating about what our best comedy, and again, this is the Baldi's, so this is only stuff that we have seen. Like if we didn't see it, didn't happen. We covered all that shit and Biggest Miss last episode. But we're going to be talking about the best comedy of 2020, the biggest disappointment, which is us personally, what we are looking forward to. And then something kicked us in the nuts about, and the best debut pilot. This could be a singularly good initial episode. It could be a season as a whole on a franchise that's kicking off. It's just, you know, some new thing that we thought was the best new thing. Let's get it on, Jim. Comedy, yeah. AKA the A. Ron Hubbard category.
Yep. AKA Jim has only seen two of these.
Which of these two have you seen?
Rick and Morty and What We Do in the Shadows.
Yeah. Okay. Well, What We Do in the Shadows, I think might rank pretty high.
You think so? I'm less in love with the show than a lot of people. Is the Nick Kroll season, I think.
They're all Nick Kroll seasons. He's had a big part in both seasons. Yeah.
He always brings a show down for me. Like way, way down. I actually don't like any of the episodes he's in at all.
You don't say.
And I think the characters are better than the episodes a lot of the time, or the characters are better than any individual jokes that they tell, which is good and bad. It's hit and miss for me, this show.
Not unfair. Okay, well, having said that, Rick and Morty season 4B is what is at the top right now. I see no reason to put it down to the bottom. BoJack Horseman's finale season. If people want to know, like, is this season finale season B, finale season A? Like, I guess I'm taking this all at the same because, like, I couldn't tell you which was which. This is just the last season of BoJack Horseman in total. So mm-hmm. I know they took a hiatus, came back one. I think the and I don't know, maybe this was eligible for two different Baldies. Yeah. So it's just the final season of BoJack Horseman, which I thought was amazing. And it's my kind of show. It does like really serious looks at mental illness and depression and imposter syndrome and all the terrible ways that we treat ourselves and each other. And I thought what was amazing in this final season is it showed how some people are able to kind of move on, you know, and some people aren't. Some people and what those paths kind of look like. And also the thing I really thought was interesting about BoJack is that it's villains. Like, you know, BoJack's mother is a terrible person along the lines of the Preaker woman from Sharper Objects. And it explains why she is the way she is, but without ever asking you to feel sorry for her, you know? Mm-hmm. Like, yeah, a lot of people that are terrible have had terrible backgrounds, but you know what? A lot of people that have terrible backgrounds are not terrible people. It's not an excuse. It's not an excuse to wallow in your own misery and to not make any effort to get better. It's like a person who breaks their hip or their leg. Feel really sorry for them. But if they just sit there and they kick at anyone that tries to get there and help them, they curse at doctors to try to heal them, then eventually you're like, you know what? Fuck you. Be miserable and die. And I like that because a lot of times these shows make the mistake of wanting you to not just understand, but forgive and empathize these people. They're not asking for any of that stuff. So and manages to be fucking hilarious, too. The verbal wordplay like is a constant delight. They found new and fresh ways to make the absurdity of the situation where you have horse people and dog people and bird people coexisting with people coexisting with just actual birds and horses. Like the juxtaposition that was never like not hilarious.
It's a dark picture inventive. You're painting here of horses fucking people and people fucking birds. I don't know. The DNA mix-up that's happening here is unnatural.
Yeah, no, I think it's a different, like, what I appreciate is, like, the horse people are a different, like, it's kind of like us and a chimpanzee. Like, yeah, we recognize that there's some common ancestry there, but we're not going to go around fucking chimps, right?
Mm-hmm.
That's not how you make a chimp person, like a monkey man. You don't do that by fucking a chimpanzee. Anyway, you do it by fucking a gorilla. Tan. Everybody knows that.
Oh Chris yeah.
Yes. You fuck. That's how you make a monkey man. You fuck Chris Kattan or The Rock.
Yeah, no, the monkeys fuck him for sure.
What we do in the shadows. Now it's very hard for me to tell the difference between season two and season one because I watched this and the movie and both seasons all in a single binge. So honestly, that what we do in the shadows is probably getting a little bonus credit for its first season.
Mm. Yeah.
Having said that, I do remember some really good plot lines. I really love the emotional vampire Colin and him becoming like the darkest of all lords when he gets promoted to middle management and can just suck people's emotions and wither them on like a scale that he had not even imagined before. Is pretty good stuff.
Doesn't he meet his match in this season as well? Is this a season where he has like the woman who moves in the office who
plays by like a man, like Amanda Bayers?
She's another SNL, like sucking up all the sympathy or something. And then they end up like coming to some kind of truce. And I,
cause he's like a psychic vampire. Like he just essentially sucks people's like just living spirit. And she's a particularly emotional vampire.
Right.
But it never stops being funny whenever he would like trap someone into a dead end conversation and he'd turn to the camera and like make a stereotypical monster face and his eyes would glow with the I just think it's really funny. Plus, he's kind of the most he doesn't have the conventional drawbacks. So like he would come to the rescue when they get stuck in sunlight with umbrellas and shit.
The well? Yeah, this is the well season.
It might be the well season.
I think so, because this is the Guillermo season where he's like going to his group or whatever who turn out to be vampire hunters. And then make a choice. Right. Is he going to hunt vampires and give in to his what seemed to be his natural urges or accidental? I like how they play that, where he's never like trying to kill vampires, but holy shit, he's killed a lot of vampires.
Guillermo's my least favorite person in season one, because I'm like kind of like getting tired of his shit. Have some self-respect for yourself. Making him like a descendant of a long line of vampire hunters, or
he's Van Helsing,
like,
right? Like, is he a Van Helsing?
Like a distant relation, and like that he's just like psychically good at killing vampires without even trying, while also being a familiar. I thought that stuff was all really clever. The one lady that's faking to being a vampire so she can acquire a bunch of familiars to do a bit. Like, there's just so much stuff that's like kind of real life, just slightly skewed, you know?
Real life. Is this the Jackie Daytona season, or is that season one?
The Jackie Daytona season? Okay. Oh my God.
All right. I'm talking myself into this. This is a better show than I remembered.
Honestly, the only bad show is it's the Nick Kroll one with the witch's hat. Every time they get that fucking witch's hat out, it kind of like, it was kind of funny the first time, but the second time it's like, no. So, I think this is the season where Laszlo also dealt with, his chief competition, the Nadja's love. And I think they're
Brett or something. I forget what his name is. It's some just generic ass name.
But they turned that kind of like that Bram Stoker plot where like Winona Ryder keeps coming back every 100 years to be reborn. Like it's that same thing with her. She's got this lover throughout all of time that keeps being reborn, and they have this torrid relationship. And Nadja and Jackie Daytona's relationship, I think, is Laszlo's relationship is, I just think it's one of the best parts of the show.
Oh, they're the best parts of the show. Like standout heads and shoulders above like anybody else in that show.
Who's the guy that plays Laszlo?
Barry.
My God, that guy. He might be like Anchorman, Will Ferrell. It might be a Will Ferrell type where he's just really good at this one character.
Yeah, yeah.
But it's a hell of a character.
He does play that same character. He's got like a, I don't know, him and Jemaine Clement kind of have a similar thing going on, except Jemaine's a little bit flashier in general. Like, Matt Berry's flashy in this because he's a vampire, a fancy vampire, but you should watch IT Crowd, at least season two, because Matt Berry is the boss in that season, and he is very, very good.
Harley Quinn, I spoke a lot about this in some of the Biggest Surprise stuff yesterday, but this is a very funny show that takes a lot of the B tier. This is kind of like Guardians of the Galaxy. It takes a lot of the B tier of DC. Shark King. Who the fuck knows what the Shark King is? And builds like this crew for Harley Quinn to kind of take over with Poison Ivy. And there's just a lot of really cool like relationships and like, you know, what do you do when your best friend lets you down? And like, how do you reconcile from that? What does it mean to let your best friend down? What does it mean to be there for somebody who's going through a self-destructive circle when you're losing someone to a toxic relationship? And it tells it within like a super villain kinda, you know, because it's one of those things where like whenever you're doing something with villains, you can't just have them doing villain shit all the time, or you would have a hard time. You know, it's kind of like what we do in the shadows. If they were just preying on people 24/7. It would be a turnoff. So like mostly she's victimizing other worse supervillains and deflating the egos of superheroes that might need that egos deflated. They also have just a brilliant concept of like taking all the heroes off the table temporarily. So like, you know, there's a plausible situation where Harley Quinn could kind of like take over Gotham. But yeah, no, it's good. It's cute. It's funny. And I am really looking forward to season three. Ted Lasso, I've said enough about this fucking show. Like, you know, this is like, this is kind of like the anti BoJack. Like, this is like BoJack Horseman if it was centered on Mr. Peanut Butter. It's not that Mr. Peanut Butter doesn't have problems. It's just that his interface with the world is like set to the positive switch, maybe to his own detriment, whereas BoJack is set to like the negative switch. And it's kind of a slow burn. Like, if you're into the more subversive kind of offensive comedies that I'm into, like, this is very kind of feels very NBC, not even edgy, like Seinfeld NBC, like Parks and Rec kind of NBC for like the first three episodes till it starts to skew into more interesting stuff. But I think it's worth it if you want to take that. If you know, fuck it. They're 30 minute episodes. If you want to invest 90 minutes to see if it's good, do it. Not, I don't care. The Great, if you liked Harlots on Hulu, if you like that kind of trashy, well-done, historical kind of novel thing, but also funny and occasionally poignant, great performances, great scripts, great dialogue, it's The Great. It's about Catherine the Great's rise to power as Empress of Russia in the, 19th century? And Midnight Gospel is a collection of Duncan Trussell's podcasts, interviews, clipped out of context, and then animated. The conceit being you've got this interdimensional traveler that, like, you know, feeds a certain token or material into a machine, which then opens up the multiverse and allows him to be born into someone else's body to, like it's almost like a tourist. Like, you could, you know, he might wake up in Jim Jones' body and drive it around for a day and see what that's like. And he has these dialects with these strange inhabitants of these dimensions. And that's essentially the core of the podcast. Like, you know, like, he has an interview with a real life famous person who's now going to be like a vulture vampire. And he's going to be a cosmic jellyfish. And they're going to talk about some kind of existential thing. Sometimes it's about 10% way up its ass in like the worst kind of high Joe Rogan way. And like 10% like. The episode where he has a conversation about with his mom over several podcasts about her dying of cancer. And like, there's a single half hour episode where he's like reborn into his baby and she's his mom. And they're having these like, you know, early stages, you can tell, where it's like, you know, they're going about happy memories and all that stuff. But they like, there's some raw shit there, you know, where it's like towards the end and he don't want her to go and she don't want to go either. And but she's also kind of like a therapist and a humanities teacher. So she's saying these incredibly wise things to leave him with. And it's worth the emotional voyage, I think. I'm actually getting choked up talking about it. So there's your slate. There's your slate of 2020 comedies. I'm so jaded and burnt out. I can't enjoy a normal, just good hearted comedy anymore. I got to have some kind of fucking raw shit happening. What were the two that you saw? You saw in the Shadows? Oh, and Rick and Morty.
Rick and Morty, yeah. Which is the only one we actually really covered.
Yeah, that's the thing with comedies. We don't really cover comedies.
Yeah.
We would have never even covered Rick and Morty had it not been for the ill-fated Rick and Morty experiment, which I don't know. We might be stuck covering forever now because it did pretty good for us.
Maybe. Not. I mean, we talked about what we do in the Shadows on an Off the Clock, I think. You talked about Ted Lasso a bit.
Off the Clock, yeah.
But I think
I even talked about Harley Quinn.
Did you? Okay.
Yeah. Because like BoJack, I think BoJack and the Great and Midnight Gospel came out early in the year before we'd even invented OTC.
Yeah.
So let's start ranking them, I guess. BoJack, Rick and Morty's fine. I think BoJack Horseman goes above Rick and Morty.
Okay.
Here's what's new in premium content for our club members.
Executive producers get to exercise their voting fingers again this week with another prestige movie poll. This week's nominees are Mystic River, The Last Samurai, and Secondhand Lions. Take your pick and seal our fate.
This Monday on the premium feed, we open up the books and deliver a State of the Empire podcast, talking about the current condition of Bald Move and our plans for this year.
This Friday, it's Lunch 420, which given last weekend seems like a tragic missed opportunity. Ah well. Lunch will be served piping hot at 1 p.m. Eastern. Come join live or warm up some leftovers when lunch is released in podcast form later that day.
If you want more Bald Move in your life, head over to support.baldmove.com to find out how you can get tons of bonus audio and video content plus ad-free feeds.
Since the dawn of time, we've been putting clothes on our back that identify us with our people, our group, our tribe.
And while Bald Move might be one of the smallest, weirdest tribes out there, transcending all concepts of border, class, culture, and creed, we still have respect for the old ways.
At support.baldmove.com, you can get t-shirts, hats, mugs, and more. We have something for every one of our podcasts, or just wear the four pips of the Bald Move logo with pride.
Bald Move merch beats running around naked, and they make a great gift for the Bald Move fan in your life. Join our tribe! Head over to support.baldmove.com and click on merch to start shopping.
We try to make it super easy to support making podcasts at Bald Move. Just join the club.
But some people aren't the joining type, or maybe they're already in the club but want to add a little bit of gratuity for an especially great season of coverage, or for a podcast that really spoke to them, or gave them that bit of support in a tough time.
For these, and for whatever other reason you might have, our tip jar is always open. Head over to support.baldmove.com and click the donate option to say, hey, keep doing what you're doing. We appreciate it.
Once again, check out support.baldmove.com for all the great ways to help me and Jim keep making the podcast you love.
I think what we do in the Shadows goes. Yep.
I don't
Harley
know.
Quinn's fine. Gosh. Ted Lasso can't be better than BoJack. And I don't think, because I resisted liking it for half of its runtime.
Mm-hmm.
And whereas What We Do in the Shadows was just compulsively watchable and quotable. Like, there's There's not a damn thing that I'm going to come out of like a catchphrase of Ted Lasso or just kind of like a zinger. And I don't know if that means something, but it's like, no, it's this really funny situation about the star soccer player and his girlfriend and the washed up aging star soccer player and the person owns the team. And it takes like three episodes to unroll, but they get to this one part and it's really funny. Like, I don't know what to do with that. Throw it underneath Rick and Morty, I guess. No, fuck it. It's not even as good. No, I'm going to treat this as like the order of things I think you should watch.
Sure.
You know. So with that said, oh, God, no, that's not helping me. This man.
Well, I can't help you.
I know.
I can't help you on this one.
I feel like BoJack's getting a little bit of like series emeritus credit here too. But like I said, I thought it was I was really wondering how the fuck they're gonna pull a happy ending out of this, and they kind of don't. Like, it's like real life, you know. BoJack kind of survives. Some of his friends do better than him. They have a kind of a will they won't they that, like, to its credit, they never never really consummate. The Great, where do I put The Great in here? Because The Great's not anything like this. The Great is just like historical comedy. It's got a lot of modern sensibilities, but, you know, it never asks you to sympathize with the Empress of Russia.
I didn't even know it was a comedy. I don't know why I see these like royalty period pieces and I'm like, oh, that's a comedy? Weird. I expect it to be this stuffy British drama.
No, it's very, very modern in sensibilities. I don't know, man. Like, these are all so different. Am I going to go by just ha-ha factor? Is that going to be the thing that saves the day?
I mean, that's what we did in the
Mega Baldy.
Best of the Baldies, yeah.
Mm.
I think you got to go with your heart.
If the ha-has win, then I think it's got to, like, what we do in the shadows has to go up on top. Because I think I laughed the hardest in that show. But man, Rick and Morty was really funny this year, too.
Yeah, I looked at a few episodes. I don't remember them beat for beat. I just remember them generally.
Like, some of that stuff, like the Vada Acid episode.
It's good.
That's like really good.
The episode where fucking Jerry creates like a whole, you know, he creates like a race of gingerbread people and then comes and storms the like primitive gingerbread people and he like storms Rick's future city or something.
Yeah.
Or Beth's future city. It's a good one. That's
Childric of Mort. Yeah. There's that. What's the one with the dragons?
Oh, right. The fuck dragons.
Yeah. I can't remember. That was a good one. A Claw and Hoarder. I think that was the one that the slut dragon episode. Because that just the turns of phrase that were coming out of that. I thought was really, really funny.
Yeah, they had fun with that one.
The Inception heist episode, the Ocean's 11 Inception episode, I thought. You know, like they continually try to get one over on each other. Or he goes off on the Heistotron to see who can like anticipate his moves. It's like I said, there's a lot of really good episodes, and I like remember particularly busting my gut over that Slut Dragon episode. Mm-hmm. But Shark King is also hilarious from Harley Quinn. I remember laughing a lot because like he's this like mild mannered, lovable dude that like is also a man shark. So every once in a while, he'll just like tear a man in half and eat him.
Oh, is that?
And you kind of
Ron Funches.
Yes. Okay. Oh my God, Ron Funches.
Yeah, he's great. He's on Giant Bomb's podcast sometimes.
Yeah, I've actually listened to a couple of his podcasts. He has a couple like in the early stage of the pandemic, he was doing those like those positivity podcasts that I really enjoyed. That guy's a cool dude. Very funny. Yeah. I'm having a hard time. So the Midnight Gospel is not as funny as these others. It is sometimes hysterical, but it's more of surreal, absurdist, and, you know, poignant. BoJack, What We Do in Shadows, Rick and Morty and Harley Quinn are the ones that like make you bust a gut laughing. So I think that's about right. Okay. What We Do in Shadows might win, especially since it's also one you've seen. Because I want to put BoJack. If we're going with the ha-has, I think it goes What We Do in the Shadow, Rick and Morty, Harley Quinn, BoJack.
Okay. So you're going with the ha-has?
Yeah, I think I'm going with the ha-has.
That'll be a top four. I think we need five nominees. You want to pick one of these last three here?
Which to round out the I list? Want people to see?
Yeah.
Let's go with the great.
The great.
Nothing else. I think I might actually do some coverage of that over on the Swizzbold Entertainment side if and when it comes back.
Okay. Looks like we got our list.
Fuck. God, I'm so glad to be done as category. It's all my fault.
I know.
All right.
Next one will be better. It'll be both of us. Here we go. Next up is biggest disappointment. There's a lot
some
of
good ones. The year 2020. Say No More gave us 365 reasons to hate it. Bob Ross getting unceremonious. Oh, actually, wasn't 2020 a leap year? Did we not get like an extra day of misery?
No. I think you're right. Was 2020 a leap year?
Yes, it was. This fucking year tagged us for an extra 24 hours of bullshit. I think it won. Bob Ross being unceremoniously ripped from Amazon Prime Video just as me and Cecily were getting into our Bob Ross competitive painting league groove, which we'll talk more about here. Cyberpunk 2077.
It's wow, what a shit show, huh? Hugely anticipated game,
and it single-handedly turned their fans from Witcher fans to bitchier fans.
Close.
This has got a big asterisk because I gave up on this show after two episodes, and yet I've heard in subsequent research that this was actually kind of fairly well regarded if you saw the whole series. Another fucking Ted Lasso where you had to give it three or four episodes.
Huh.
Who's given comedies three or four episodes to be funny? What is this? It's one thing to be like, hey, I get it. You don't like The Expanse, but you got to get through. You got to at least get to episode four, close quarter battles, before you kind of like, if you're a science fiction fan before, because, you know, just not as, you know, you got to get to the first space battle before you can write a show off.
Mm-hmm.
The comedies? Come on, man. Out the gate, you should be funny, right?
Oh, yeah. I mean, if the whole point is to make jokes, the jokes have to be good right off the bat.
Losing Cecily, this is kind of like a 2020 thing, like, you know, 2020 sucking indirectly led to us having to get rid of our first employee before they even completed a year of service with us.
Mm-hmm. Yep. That's a big loss.
Wonder Woman 1984. Wonder Woman was one of the shining installments of the DC universe, the DCU, and They got the band all back together, got Chris Pine, got Patty Jenkins, got Gal Gadot, and somehow the sophomore album blew chunks real bad, creatively bankrupt. We'll talk about each one of these a little bit more in return. Do we need to talk more about 2020?
No. 2020. As a matter of fact, I think it almost has to win because all of these things are included in it, right? Like,
yeah, you're right. It's the set of all horrors. You know, you began the year with Australia being on fire. You ended with the world losing millions to coronavirus. You know, advanced nations such as the United States, and we weren't alone, certainly, in this completely falling on our face trying to do any kind of thing in a unified, coordinated way to make this better. The election, which was an unyielding nightmare. These American elections. I can't believe we're going to start this shit up again 2 years from now. My God, make it stop. Yeah, I mean, all the other stuff sucks pretty bad. I guess we want to let's go running through down. So 2020, I think everyone understands that 2020 was kind of a uniquely bad year. We had racial strife, we had civic strife, we had people trying to subvert democracy. It's just a whole fucking deal. COVID, we are all locked down for the majority of this year. Couldn't see our friends and family. Bullshit.
Yeah, because it's honestly kind of list, but that's like the big one, right?
I want to say that, like, this wasn't even as bad as it could have been, because I think about, like, you know, what if the election had gone the other way and that was shadowing over all of, like, the holiday season, because we had this kind of merciful respite from, like, Thanksgiving until Christmas before, like, you know, there's always this kind of, like, court cases, but they're all being lost, and we made it to January 6th before, oh, right, yeah, this is all still a big deal. Anyway, 2020, everybody. Losing Bob Ross. Jim, a lot of people don't know what the fuck we're talking about here. What was the Bob Ross experiment?
I can't remember the name. It was like the BRPL or something. Bob Ross.
CPL, Competitive Painting League.
Competitive Painting League is a series of videos that you and Cecily did while Bob Ross, his entire catalog was available on Twitch streaming.
Like 20 some seasons. I think it was like 12 episodes a season, 13 episodes a season. Jesus. Lots of episodes.
Was it a thing that you did watch parties alongside, or?
Yep.
Okay.
Yep,
so
did the watch parties.
Do watch parties, which, as you know, if you've tuned in for any of our Sci-Fi Sundays, it automatically syncs up with your commentary in the episode. So it was really cool. It was a ton of fun. You guys put a lot of work into the templates, the video side of it, where you had sets. Yeah, that you had constructed, and, you know, tickers running across the bottom. Think like any Monday Night Football or whatever, any football commentary show you've seen, and it looked pretty much exactly like that, except you are commentating Bob Ross's painting each week.
Yeah. Yeah, well, each week we'd roll a 20-sided die to determine a season, a 12-sided die to determine an episode. And we'd have three bouts, three of his paintings, and we would cover them with the intensity of a playoff football game.
Yeah. And it was a ton of
all,
fun. But then
all the happy little mountains, the happy little accidents, the late game cabins. It was just it's a whole myth. And we got like, I don't know, 8 or 9 episodes, or, you know, like total shows, or I guess bouts deep into this thing.
And then Amazon ripped away the Bob Ross. They lost streaming rights, I guess, to Bob Ross, and so all of that was taken off of Twitch, and you couldn't do the watch parties anymore.
Yeah, imdb.com, apparently they have a streaming channel and you can watch Bob Ross 24/7 on it, and because of that I can no longer do commentary on Bob Ross, and it sucked. It felt like it was building to something, but what are you going to do? Cyberpunk 2077, we just did an off the clock about this. I mean, this was just a debacle. Like, it was like a consensus. Everyone's probably most looking forward to. It was the follow up from a studio that had done well regarded work on the Witcher 3. Was, you know, like almost everybody's game of the year, or like retrospective game of the year for that year. It was a lot of fun. Mm-hmm. Open world future game where you could hack people and you get body mods and you could do, you know, some dirty cyberpunk shit.
Yeah, this was this was the game that I was looking forward to this year, the big one. And when it came out, it was a technical mess. It was like, say what you want about the gameplay, but the technical side of this, there were so many bugs. And they were so severe, too. You know, you'd be driving along and cars would just appear in front of you and ram full speed into you. You'd be teleported across the map. You'd be, for no reason, thrown a mile into the air. NPCs.
Your pants would disappear.
Right. Your pants would disappear and your dick would hang out if you were playing as a dude. Like, just shit that obviously would have happened if anybody played this game before release, and they released it anyway, and it's taken them
after delaying it for years, like this thing, and they even had a significant like 90 day delay write up, you know, and this is like, well, shit, it's Christmas. Next year is going to be a year of the next generation. We can't waste $100 million on old generation porting. Fuck it. Shove it out the door.
Right. And so they did, and everybody hated it, obviously, because it's busted as fuck. Like, who wants to play this game if you can't play the game?
And ironically, but not surprisingly, those last gen people are the ones that paid the highest price, because that game, I saw like side by side screenshots of like how shitty it looked. Like, damn.
And how shitty it played, too. Those bugs primarily affected the consoles. There were still a lot of bugs on the PC side, but those old consoles, man, didn't run as well, didn't look as good, and it was buggy as hell on those things. So, big disappointment.
Run, you know, Mary Weaver came on my radar with a pretty good turn. She had like three pretty good seasons on The Walking Dead. She was like one of my favorite, you know, new pop-up characters. She got unceremoniously dispatched on that show, and I've seen her doing some other things. This was kind of like, you know, she's the star of the show. She was opposite Domhnall Gleeson, who's also kind of been blowing up, and I was like, oh wow, this is going to be a really kind of cool, slick romantic comedy action kind of Mr. and Mrs. Smith kind of thing. And I don't, maybe it became that, but like, the first two episodes were, I felt a waste of my damn time. And I stopped watching the show. And like, again, maybe I need to come back and see more of it. But it also didn't make anybody's like best of the year list either. So I don't know. I was expecting that to be kind of like, you know, put her on a next level kind of thing. And it turned out to be fairly forgettable. I mean, losing Cecily, I think that's pretty self-explanatory. Like, we had just gotten her integrated. She was taking a lot of work, especially the production work off a gym schedule, and letting us do a lot more. I mean, she's the reason we did so much content in 2020.
Yeah.
And the, you know, there's a lot of things that went in. We'll be talking more about this on the Empire business, which is looming closer. But, you know, combination of us taking our eye off the business ball a little bit, changes that were coming about due to like big popular shows falling off, and also COVID. A lot of people, you know, panic canceling club memberships, and I mean, not even panic canceling. I mean, I was doing that stuff too. Like, Jesus, how can I if I need to hold on to as much cash if you know, I lose my job or I have to find a new job in a pandemic because Bald Move collapses. What, and you know, like a lot of those services are, so I'm not blaming anybody for sure. But it is reality that, you know, we lost about a 33% of our club in the last year. Mm-hmm. That is the 33%, incidentally, that allowed us to go from two people to three, you know, a third of our income. That's another employee. Yeah. You know, we had to. That was tough. I was tough. You know, we're friends, and some of us husbands of Cecily live with her, work with her. It was a big change. And all this happened as we were getting thrown out of our, you know, as we abandoned our studio and fell back to home. I mean, honestly, this would be Bald Move's second act going into third. Like, we have been laid low, and we're fighting our way back. You know, this is the heroic comeback, perhaps, in 2021.
Yeah.
Or maybe it's Braveheart.
Sure.
Or we just scream freedom, as we have our guts ripped out and our nuts cut off. We'll see. It's going to be thrilling. See. Watch along with us.
Either way.
And a Wonder Woman coming in it's kind of broke Cecily's heart because she was really looking forward to it. And I was too. It looked like, it's like, okay, well, DC's kind of ripping off the Guardians of the Galaxy aesthetic. But it's a good aesthetic, and a lot of people have done it. You know, Mandy did it. Color of Space did it. Like, a lot of people, like, you know what? This rainbow kind of glitzy disco 70s shit looks pretty good on film. Unfortunately, they saved that stuff for the posters. It was nowhere to be found in the film. This film was ugly and muddy and poorly technically executed, and the script was terrible. And it was a big, big fucking disappointment.
To the point where I'm not even planning on watching it. I haven't. I was kind of excited about it before I heard how bad it was. And I heard this, there was this trajectory, right, with Wonder Woman where like people watched it and everybody was like, oh, it's not as good as it should be considering Wonder Woman, the original movie. Whatever that means. So it like kind of starts to fall off a hill there. And then people turned on this thing quickly and fervently. They were just like, no, actually, this is not even a good, not even an okay movie. This is trash. This is utter garbage. I haven't seen it to actually know, but I've heard that this is just not worth my time. So fuck it.
Significantly worse than Aquaman, which had the reputation of being like, it's pretty good for an Aquaman. It's pretty good for DC when really it's kind of a bad film.
It's bad. Yeah.
Wonder Woman significantly worse than Aquaman, in my opinion. Okay. So
I won't be watching it.
Another, you know, and they got not but the Zack Snyder 4.5 hour Justice League release between them and the next project. So I don't. I mean, the thing is like the DC, it's not a sure thing like Marvel, but like they have kind of the unique capacity to kind of like do weird shit, like where Marvel would never do a Joker. You know, Marvel wouldn't let a Logan sure happen under its watch. Like they had the debate for a year and a half before they decided, oh my God, should we let Deadpool 3 be rated R? Like, no brainer shit. They really have a struggle. So like where DC sometimes can do, or, you know, I know Logan wasn't a DC project, but it was a non MCU Disney project. They can do cool stuff like Joker and Harley Quinn and things like that. And maybe that's their salvation, like leaning into like multiverse Batman, like, oh, OK, you don't like to Ben Affleck, but we got, you know, Twilight Batman coming out and it's going to be darker and grittier and all this other stuff. And you didn't like the Henry Cavill Superman. Well, we're going to go back to the big blue Boy Scout mode because that's a little bit more comic booky. But Wonder Woman was a bad movie and it's too bad. It's too bad. Hopefully it won't destroy Patty Jenkins' career, because I would like to assert that dudes have made lots of bad movies and then going on to make good movies, and no one really batted an eye. So let's maybe not lose our mind that this lady made a bad movie.
Is she the director? You know,
she's the director. Yeah. Okay. She made the first one and it was pretty good.
Yeah.
Maybe not write the next script. So
how do we rank these? I mean, I'm thinking this needs to go up, Losing Cecily.
I think that goes right under 2020, and then losing Bob Ross.
Let's change this. Bob Loss. Mm-hmm.
And then I don't care. The others are all just, you know, orders of magnitude less devastating
okay
to me personally.
So this is our top three here, I think.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then we just got to crown the winner, which I'm with you if you want to go with this. I wouldn't even put COVID here. I just say this 2020. It's been a real bummer. I hope we get out of this in 2021, because holy shit.
And that's with me having
the way this is.
This was the biggest disappointment with me not having any preconceived expectations of 2020 being good. I thought 2020 would be kind of a bad year. You know, I knew the election was coming up. Now it's going to be divisive and weird. I knew that, you know, there's a lot of structural problems with America in terms of all kinds of different things and the world. I knew a couple things going in that, you know, we're looming on a generational environmental catastrophe. It wasn't looking good. Even with those adjusted expectations, 2020 managed to be the biggest disappointment.
You know? I mean, it's the biggest bummer of a year in 100 years, right?
Like, yeah. You have to go back to Great Depression / Spanish Influenza / World War One before you get to those runs of bad luck. So
congratulations, 2020. You did it. 2020.
Get the fuck out of here. All right, you get spit on.
All right, next category. Best debut pilot.
Okay, so yeah, these are new things that we saw and talked about, and we're going to try to rank which one was the best of the new stuff. Star Trek Picard, season one, you know, not the worst new Star Trek I've seen, trading on the enormous popularity of Patrick Stewart and even Brent Spiner, came, you know, reprised Data for the first time since goddamn Nemesis. This is like 10 plus years.
Trading on our nostalgia for Star Trek The Next Generation, really. Like, it's hard to imagine that this would have captivated me if it wasn't Picard, if it was just like,
yeah,
Ricard. Well,
Star Trek
or
Riker
something.
Sounds pretty cool too.
Yeah, but if it was like a new property, like, I can't imagine that I would have been really in on this.
Janeway. Or, oh yeah, Star
like
Trek
Disco,
Archer. Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
Like, I gave Disco a shot. It disappointed me somewhere in the middle of season one, and I haven't really given it much of a shot since. Picard.
It's disappointing.
You know, it's got the same, at least we treated it with the same kind of attitude that we treat Star Trek The Next Generation with. Like, some of it is bad, some of it is good, and we will make fun of the bad parts lovingly and also really enjoy the good parts. That yeah. is kind of all I could ask of what is essentially a reboot of The Next Generation, or as close yeah. as we'll ever get.
I could ask a little more. I could ask for them a little bit more, maybe respect for the original material and sure. the set and setting. I mean, like, set. There's so many things in retrospect that bother me about, like, the fact that we open with, like, essentially a race of Datas that have been enslaved, like Measure of a Man never happened. But this thing hit us really because, yeah. like, without us trying, we had both kind of independently watched a hell of a lot of Next Generation mm-hmm. kind of leading up to this. And I was going through a little bit of a Star Trek renaissance. Like, I was like, oh, yeah, man, this show actually kind of, you get into season three, it just starts really holding up, like, compelling stuff, funny stuff. So Picard benefited from all that. And I'm actually looking forward to season two. This was a mess. And it had some amazing stuff in it. It had some hilarious stuff in it, like Picard trying to be some kind of space gang lord villain.
Pimp. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, the leather beret and a terrible, terrible French. Like, me at my most, Jean-Pierre Meow. Like, that's not how you would. It's something. It's worth seeing for sure. Here's a real, I won't say even a pleasant surprise, because, you know, Devs looked like an interesting project from the jump. Mm-hmm. And it led, you know, I love projects that allow you and me to have very interesting conversations about causality and free will,
yeah.
and
time travel, you know, if
interdimensional
that's
stuff
in there. Yeah,
it reminds me of, like, you know, our old days being stuck out in field service just talking about shit like some old ladies that stuck at the door.
Yeah,
I mean everyone involved in this project did great work. From who's the Alec who's the guy that did Ex Machina?
Garland. Yeah, Alex Garland.
Like, he does a lot of this kind of cool out there next level stuff. And Devs was a full, you know, full of that stuff. Nick Offerman was, I've never seen him in a role like this. Mm-hmm. He's kind of like a cross between Steve Jobs and Elon Musk and, you know, Woz.
It just really depressed. Yeah.
Yeah.
Just a really depressed version of that. Allison Pill's in this as well as Picard. She's better in this than she is in Picard, I think. Yes, the character is better.
She's as good as this as I've ever seen her. She's because I've seen her, like, the standout work I've seen her do is kind of like Newsroom, Scott mm-hmm. Pilgrim, American Horror Story, Cult. Oh. And this is by far and away the thing that she's been the best at.
Yeah.
Other than maybe Scott Pilgrim. She plays a pretty good bitter Scott X.
Yeah.
Now, And I think this, the I will say that I think this had a particularly brilliant pilot mm-hmm. where I thought the series was going to be about one thing and it violently came to an end at that first episode. And remind me a lot of kind of like the pilot of Peaky Blinders. It had a similar kind of like, wow, that was a ballsy thing to do. And unlike Peaky Blinders, didn't immediately undo it in the second episode. So swung for the fences.
Remind me what is the series? What is the pilot end with?
It ends with Yuri being bagged up by Forrest's chief security officer.
Oh, right. Okay.
Like, you think that he's like that's the main character, but, you know, like it's his POV. We're seeing all this thing through, and, like, all of a sudden, you know, he's doing some weird stuff, clandestine, maybe doing some corporate espionage, and then it's just, yeah. So
Yeah.
I think this is like a not just a bit good debut. This is actually a really good pilot. It made me like I was intrigued the whole time. But then when that happened, I was like, oh, wow, anything could happen on this show. Mm-hmm. So.
You've been listening to quite a few Bald Move podcasts now, but you're not in the club? Whoo boy, you are missing out.
Not only are all of our premium club podcast feeds completely ad-free, but we have lots of other great content exclusively for people in the club.
There's a weekly lunch with Jim and Aaron where we chat with fans about anything and everything from TV and films, food, fun, life advice, and more.
But there's also Off the Clock, our premium podcast where we talk about all the shows we don't have time for on our public feeds.
Plus, you get access to our full spoiler-filled first-run movie reviews of our newly released films.
Don't forget Instant Take and Talk podcast, where we give our hot takes and discuss television shows with our fans live and immediately after the episode airs.
With mega shows like House of the Dragon coming this summer, we're going to have lots to talk about.
Not to mention access to our fun and friendly community of club members, with exclusive Discord channels and a dedicated forum. It's one of the best places on the internet to hang out and chat about pop culture.
Bottom line, you're helping two regular type guys in the Midwest make the content you like to listen to, which some would say is rewarding to itself.
Help keep the lights on and the bits flowing at Bald Move.
And get some awesome content for yourself. Head to support.baldmove.com to join the club today. Commission podcasts are an awesome feature here at Bald Move that allows you, the individual listener, to decide what we talk about for a single podcast.
The community loves it because it often leads to fun, fan-favorite films and TV shows that we've overlooked getting the coverage they deserve.
And we love it because we're constantly exposed to great stuff that's not even on our radar.
The way it works is simple. You go to support.baldmove.com and you click on commissions. Then you pay the flat rate for the commission and tell us what two-ish hours of content you'd like us to make podcasts on.
Then we'll contact you for details, advanced feedback, and any dedications you'd like to make.
Then we watch the thing, discuss the thing, turn it into a podcast, and pump it right into your ears.
We get consistently great feedback on how much our commissioners love their podcast, and they make great gifts for the dedicated Bald Move fan in your life.
And who knows, that dedicated fan could even be you. Treat yourself. Check out support.baldmove.com for more info.
Plot Against America. This is weird. I don't even know if this is a legal thing because, you know, we've talked a lot about it. This is a miniseries. It's not going to come back.
There are a lot of those.
It can't be a best debut. The pilot is really good, though. The pilot's really good at showing, you know, hey, we're going to ground you in this particular version of 1940s America. And we're going to show you like some of the things like I believe in this episode deals with like the Nazi rally they had, this real life thing. They had Madison Square Garden, 40,000 Americans showed up to attend it.
I remember the pilot for this being an interesting setup, but not much beyond that. Just like, hey, we're putting you in the time and place. The guys, you know, are standing out on their front lawn and they're having conversations about things they're worried about, but nothing big happens in that first episode. It's part of the reason I haven't gone back through it and finished that thing is because I was hooked by it, but not like intensely. I didn't need to go back and continue it.
I thought the Madison Square Garden stuff actually did happen in there, which I, you know, if you weren't aware of that real history, then maybe it wouldn't. But because I watched that, I binged that over like three nights, like just like watch two or three.
And I've only seen the pilot, the first episode. So if I don't remember it, it probably didn't occur in that first episode. But then again, I don't have a great memory, so.
So I honestly, like I said, I don't know what this is. And the next one is kind of the same, except for I do think it had a particularly good pilot, The Good Lord Bird, a really great introduction to the main character of Onion, who is this not his real name. He's a boy who gets mixed up with this a slave revolt that this John Brown is leading in Kansas, one of the battleground. Every new territory was like a intense political battleground about whether they're going to be admitted to the Union as a slave state or a free state. And, you know, the John Brown is leading his men to terrorize potential slave owners in Kansas. And this young boy who's mistaken for a girl gets wrapped up in this. And Ethan Hawke is like full on red face screaming. It's very funny, very irreverent, but also very poignant. And I thought it was a particularly good first episode. But it's a miniseries, so it's not going to come back. Raised by Wolves, season one.
We talked about this season or this pilot, because the pilot I remember being not amazing, but enough to keep me watching and interesting.
But I never made it past season, the third episode. Finish. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't on many people's best of. I know the people that made it through like didn't feel like it was a waste of their time, but I also didn't, you know, hear many people say, you know, this is a must see. No, and we have an embarrassment of great science fiction.
Right. When the Expanse is on, it's tough. But this is different, right? This is like a slower moving 2001-esque kind of feel to it, but also like every once in a while it kicks you in the face with action. And I appreciated it for what it was. I don't really know why I didn't finish this.
It feels like classic science fiction in that it's like almost fantastical, like Arthur C. Clarke, Larry Niven, Ray Bradbury, like technology indistinguishable from magic. Like you could describe these characters as angelic beings and you wouldn't be far off.
Yeah, you've got essentially robots who you know can fly into the air and send out sonic pulses of some kind that
transform their appearance at will.
Yeah,
make people explode by screaming at them.
I think you know you could see a robot being able to do in the future, a far enough future.
Sure,
but also feel borderline magic. I think you're right.
And there's some interesting things like, you know, how are these being, you know, raised by wolves essentially alludes to the fact that they brought these child embryos onto this planet to try to repopulate it. And you find that you just keep finding more and more about like, oh, these people were refugees from a war between theists and atheists.
Yeah.
For the soul of the culture going forward. And that's the thing. Like a lot of stuff is inherently fascinating to me.
Yep.
It kind of like the Prometheus / Covenant without aliens look and feel of this show.
Yeah.
Left me a little cold, and the performances kind of necessarily made me feel cold. Like the main robots are just, you know, mother and father are just weirdos. The children they're raising are weirdos. Tragic weirdos at that.
Especially mother. It's like, wow, that robot's insane. You know, it's like I don't know what I feel about an insane robot. I'm sure you get artificial intelligence, you know, to a high enough degree and it could do everything that humans could do, including going insane. But I guess I wasn't on board necessarily for the story they were telling.
I feel like I'm going to watch this when I have a long bout of sickness. Like I've been remarkably healthy this year. Probably has something to do with me washing my hands, sanitizing, and wearing masks all the time.
And 90%
of my fellow countrymen around me doing it, staying home. But yeah, next time I get like a flu or I'm down for like a week or so, like I feel like this is like, yeah, you know what? I got three more episodes of this to watch. Why the fuck not? But it's not going to win this category. The Third Day.
Yeah.
Does this belong in here too? Because here's my recollection of the first episode of The Third Day. Like, I don't know. And then like the last 10 minutes or so kind of flipped the lid on the weirdness and let Jude Law kind of stretch a little bit. And I'm like, okay, yeah, I definitely going to finish this part. But no, you got way more into it than I did. And
yeah, I mostly appreciate this for the 24-hour live stream they did, which is not the debut or the pilot of this thing.
It's a mini series, so it's only be a six debut.
Episodes.
You have to judge it by the pilot, and
and I think you're right, the pilot is not especially gripping. I think I was in it because it, you know, it had this reputation as like Wicker Man with Jude Law, which I really wanted to see, and it lives up to that, I think, for the most part. There's this weird cult island, essentially. All that stuff is in there, and I really liked it for what it was. through the first three episodes of that live stream, but I don't know that it would win anything on best pilot, certainly.
The thing about this movie is like the cinematography, the sound design, and the way that you would like use saturation to like reveal how emotionally exposed a character was at any given time, I thought was pretty next level. Like they used every possible bandwidth to tell the emotional side of the story, and it was quite gripping.
If we had some kind of visual technical category, this would be in strong contention, I think.
I'll remember scenes of Jude Law on a beach talking about like the death of his child and coming to grips with it, and I guess that pilot did have that hook of like why the kids are out there with the child's clothes, and
one of them tried to kill herself, and
one of them tried to kill himself,
trying to save her, and
the community is kind of weirdly okay with that, and but I don't know. I feel like it's kind of weak entry to the category. Lovecraft Country, which is something I was massively looking forward to. I mean, this thing had a lot of great talent attached to it. An inherently interesting story. Like, what if Lovecraft, but told through the lens of Black Americans going through, you know, the segregation, Jim Crow South, struggling with that, you know, blatant hostility and racism, malice, malignancy.
I was a little confused by the pilot because I expected something that was, or I guess I was confused by episodes 1 and 2 because I expected something more connected and more like, you know, an ongoing story. And then the first two episodes made it feel like this was going to be more of an anthology. But I think by the end of the season, they've come back around to where, like, yes, it is many episodes within a larger arc, but also
that all build together.
Yes, some of them are like
kind of like
thematically connected. Well, all of them are thematically connected, but some of them are connected to the plot. And some of them aren't, you know.
Yeah. I don't know. I thought the first episode did. Yeah, you're right. Like it didn't necessarily prepare me for the width and depth of the whole series, because there was a lot of it reminded me a lot of the X-Files, where you had these kind of monster situations of the week, but they all built towards this longer myth arc of the, you know, the Braithwaite family and their history with the Freemans, and the blood magic they're trying to do, and, you know, the meaning of people's, like, that, all that stuff was interesting, and I liked it. But I think the first episode was an amazing, like, you know, I had high hopes for it, and I got exactly what I was wanting, like the juxtaposition of like the horror of, I'm a Black person in a sundown town county. Can I get to the fucking border before the sun goes down? Mash right up with like, oh God, I'm also being confronted with the horror of the Black goat of the forest with 1,000 eyes from Cthulhu mythos. Like it delivered everything, and with big what the fuck moments, but with also the connecting to the real life horror. I thought it was a really effective pilot. Even though it may be not representative of the series of a whole, because the series went a lot of places. I mean, there was I remember memorably, there was one right in the middle. It was like Indiana Jones / National Treasure.
Yeah.
Just like a old fashioned clue finding treasure hunt.
And that's what they did. They did ghost stories, right? They did the Indiana Jones adventures with a little bit of supernatural twist, like Indiana
Lots
Jones
of spooky
does.
Genre stuff. Like in the same way, Indiana Jones always kind of a little spooky, you know, it's always about some kind of artifact or ghosts or the power of the Lord. And yeah.
They did, they did a lot of different things like time travel and, you know, interdimensional travel, all that kind of like just borderline weird stuff. They had an episode that did it. And by the end of it, I saw it as like one of the most interesting, innovative shows on television right now.
Okay. Shall we send it to the top? Cause we just got through a review. So let's not fuck the arguments now. Let's send that sucker to the top.
Let's do it.
Star Trek Picard. Oh boy. Now we got pilots and seasons going against just pilots. The Star Trek Picard pilot is really good.
What happened?
I'm gonna put that out there. You were introduced to the one clone girl who got attacked by the dudes in black. and Picard, you know, doing like some kind of anniversary interview where he essentially denounced the Federation and its abandonment of the Romulan refugees and their cybernetic, the demonization of cybernetic organisms. Then her being psychically called to Picard, and you know, there's an action sequence where she ends up getting killed, and but then he finds out there is another, and she's connected with Data. A lot of the central mystery and the characters painting were efficiently set up here. A lot of like the interesting parts of the central mystery were set up here. Had some like well done action scenes where you know Picard can't be an action man anymore, not really.
No.
So you have to believably surround him with a cast of people that can do that. But that was always kind of every once in a while Picard would punch out a Ferengi or wrestle with the Borg Queen, but mostly he was content to let Data, Worf, and Riker do that shit, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, the Picard is there with the morality speech for the hammer of the hammer of the bad guy with and the righteous backbone of the ship. But so I felt like he slipped in this role pretty easy. Also, the introduction of this man as kind of maybe losing his mind, has a little bit of space Alzheimer's.
Just got that Eremotic syndrome or whatever it is.
Adding a little bit of fragility to his character that I thought suited Patrick Stewart's age. You know, a lot of people spilled ink on that line. It's a good pilot. I don't think it's as good as Lovecraft Country, because Lovecraft Country didn't have anything that like bothered me on the face of it.
No.
Where Picard hit me right away with, oh, they got slave datas. What the fuck? They're just kept in closet in mass, referred to by numbers. What the shit? This is like the exact horror situation that was outlined in Star Trek Season 2. So,
yeah, it also didn't have Narek and his sister in it, which is a positive for Lovecraft Country. Narek, not as much. Yeah. His sister, oof, boy.
Oof.
Devs,
well,
I think
it was. She was just Ensign What's-Her-Face, which I think was her name for the rest of the season. Because did they even reveal her actual Romulan name?
They had to, right? Right? What's she credited as in these episodes?
I think it's Lieutenant Rizzo or whatever the hell her name was.
Laris? Is that who it is?
Maybe. No, maybe that they did give her.
That can't be it. Girardi, I know who that is. Yeah. I don't know, man. She might not have been in this first episode. But
okay, so Picard's
the sunglass Romulan. I forgot about some of this stuff.
Somehow is still my profile pic on the forum.
Yep.
That was just a test that we hadn't broke our forum pic and yeah. I don't think it's better than Lovecraft Country.
Yeah.
I'm gonna suggest that Dev's pilot is better than Star Trek Picard's.
I'll agree with that.
Because again, no problems, only interesting mystery, and only good what the fucks, not bad what the fucks.
Yep.
And again, here's another one where the sound and visual design, beautiful. Like this machine, the Dev's machine, is gorgeous work of art. The soundtrack was like this ethereal,
like tinkling bells vibe.
Just emotional surround sound, kind of.
Yeah, there's this otherworldly quality that they bring out with the visuals and the audio each time you step
Elvish
into
industrial.
That place. Elvish industrial.
Yeah, like if Trent Reznor was a high elf out of Tolkien, this is what the soundtrack would sound like.
Okay, sure. Yeah, I liked it.
Poor Picard. I think the plot against America.
Oh, you think that's better?
Is better than Picard, yeah. I don't know.
I'm not sure I agree with that. Like,
are we penalizing plot because it's just not fun?
It just doesn't move the ball very far forward. Like, I'm trying to remember. Like, you got the...
That's Simon, though, man.
What, like, you got the kid who's running around.
You get introduced to a massive community worth of characters, and then a whole bunch of political figures that you might remember from history, but certainly not the margins of them. And you got to care about in the situation. You got to care about, like, you know, so Simon's a guy that, you know, you can fairly say you got to give a couple episodes before you start to get your sea legs about it. Now, I will say that this is the quickest I ever identified with a Simon cast and felt like I was really clicking with it.
Hmm.
Mm-hmm. I don't know. Deuce is pretty good too.
Yeah, I just think the stuff he makes is not meant to be flashy or hook you immediately. It's meant to just stand as a whole. And you're either gonna, you know, give him the benefit of the doubt and go with him on this journey, or you're not. And the pilot's not going to change your mind.
Simon and the guys he works with, like Pelicanos, don't really give a shit about like a flashy pilot. It's more of like, this is chapter one of the novel.
Yeah.
You know, it's not going to be the most interesting, gripping thing. I'm not going to start with a James Bond action sequence just to hook you.
No.
So you're going to go Trek over? You're going to go Picard over plot?
I would. Yeah.
Okay. I can probably get behind that.
What are we trying to make here? Top three or top five out of seven?
We usually do five, but this is a short list, so I could go with three.
Three? Okay.
I guess this is a question for me. Is the Good Lord Bird pilot better than Picard? I have a hard time saying so because you haven't even seen it. Whereas you saw the other three, you know, like...
I've seen everything except for Good Lord Bird on this list.
Actually, like, if you want to put the third day above Raised by Wolves or even the Good Lord Bird, that'd be fine with me, but like, I don't think it goes higher.
Yeah. I'm with you. I would maybe make an argument for putting it above Plot Against America, but it doesn't make the top three.
Okay. Well, you want to go with top three then?
Yeah, so you like this top
three? Are we cool with Lovecraft? I think I am. Yeah, Lovecraft, Dev, Star Trek, Picard.
I think it's actually in the correct order. Yeah.
I think so, too.
If this is our top three, I think Lovecraft wins, and we've got ourselves a category.
Booyah!
It's close between Lovecraft and Devs, because, man, both of those intrigued me in very different ways.
Emotionally
stimulating, intellectually stimulating.
A lot more action in Lovecraft Country too.
That
first episode ends in like a desperate battle against I don't know, some kind of fucking greater outer dimensional entities.
Don't they end up in the cabin at the end of that episode? With like this one cop who.
Because I think that's also part of the second episode, like the bleeds over. But yeah, they definitely are stuck in the woods with those things for sure.
Uh-huh. Yeah, that's okay. Good pilot.
I think that's good. Are we going to stop the session here?
Yep. That's it.
All right. Well, there's the second deliberations for Baldi's. Hope you guys enjoyed it.